This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It's Columbus Day in Boston, but Brookline, Cambridge, and Somerville are celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day. Now, Indigenous and Italian Americans continue to stand on opposite sides of the Columbus Day question. Indigenous American activists note Columbus is accused of enabling slavery in the Caribbean, of brutal treatment towards Indigenous Americans, and of a legacy connected with the later genocide of Indigenous American peoples. Italian-American activists see Columbus as the first immigrant and a symbol of Italian contributions to the American story. But the narrative's changing. With increasing public support for renaming this holiday to Indigenous Peoples Day and a growing number of Italian-Americans rejecting Columbus as the appropriate symbol for their immigrant contributions to the nation. So let's talk about that. We turn first to Danielle Battisti. She is an associate professor at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. Her book is Whom We Shall Welcome, Italian Americans and Immigration Reform. Danielle, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I want to start with a piece that you put in the Washington Post today called Columbus Day Had Value for Italian Americans, but it's time to rethink it. How did you get to that place, briefly, that it's time to move beyond Christopher Columbus for Italian Americans?
Well, the piece really looks at the history of how Italian Americans have used the day to craft meaning around their group's public identity. Historically, Italian Americans have used public symbols like monuments, like Columbus Day and other celebrations, to reach a broader audience in the United States about their group's position in the nation. And so I write about these topics largely in my book, which is about immigration reform. And in that book, Columbus Day often took center stage. It was a day every single year where Italian Americans could remind the nation of number one, their group's contributions to the nation, and also past instances of discrimination, and in the 1950s and 60s, current levels of discrimination. And so they sort of used that day to speak to broader audiences.
So I want to note, I'm Italian American. My grandfather came from Oronzo, Italy, at the beginning of last century. And I wonder if you can tell us, walk briefly through what the experience of Italian Americans to the United States in the 19th century was and how that led to the first observance of Columbus Day.
Like so many other sort of Southern and Eastern European immigrants, Asian immigrants, and others who were coming to the United States at the turn of the century, these were really global labor migrants who were pushed and pulled by the flows of industrial capitalism, whose families made collective decisions to advance the family household economy, and chose migration as one of many strategies to get ahead. There were very few laws regulating both emigration and immigration policies in the late 19th century. Increasingly, there were more as the 20th century went onward. And these groups generally joined in a number of working class Americans who were finding positions in industrial America, agricultural America. Italian Americans are sort of part of that labor migration, and the roots of Columbus Day do sort of appear in the same time period. Now, there are multifaceted roots of this holiday. Columbus really begins to be celebrated in the mid-19th century when a nation, a very new nation, largely composed of immigrants since Native Americans had been pushed to the margins at best or written out of history, are looking for some shared symbols or shared history to build upon. Washington Irving popularizes Columbus in a wildly inaccurate book about what he did, and Americans sort of grasp on to that narrative and create this image of Columbus for the nation. The imagery of Columbia becomes quite popular. We see the high point of this national veneration of Columbus around the Columbian Exposition in Chicago around 1892, 1893. It's at that very same moment that many Italian immigrants are facing a great deal of discrimination in the United States. In New Orleans, there's the notorious lynching of 11 Sicilians, and that's a story bound up in racial dynamics. And it's a period in which many Italian immigrants are being vilified as criminals, as other problematic sorts of undesirable immigrants in the nation. And so many Italian Americans, Italian immigrants, start to grasp on to Columbus as a different face of who they are. And they and others start to associate Columbus Day with Italian immigrants. And so this starts to happen at state and local levels. Columbus Day doesn't become a national holiday until the 1970s.
So, you know, one of the things that's interesting about that was that over time, associating heritage with Columbus was a way for Italian Americans to actually fully claim whiteness. And at the same time, you note that that was not a rejection of the supremacy of whiteness. Italian Americans in doing so didn't challenge the notion that discrimination against immigrants or other groups in the U.S. was inherently flawed. It was, I think the phrase that I read was, it was a way to flip to the other side of the ledger. That is a really complicated piece of history.
Yes, I write about this in my book, Whom We Shall Welcome. So in that book, I study Italian-American campaigns to reform America's discriminatory immigration system in the 1950s and 60s. And this was a period when Italian immigrants were considered undesirable immigrants and still limited to about 5,000 Italian non-quota immigrants coming into the nation each year. And so I look at the ways in which Italian-Americans try to combat that discrimination. And there are progressive elements, liberal elements to their campaign, but there are also conservative elements as well. And what I write about in my book is that there are many ways in which, in the 1950s and 60s, Italian Americans claim whiteness, and they essentially say, if we are just as white as German Americans, Irish Americans, etc., why can they immigrate to the United States in large numbers and yet we can't? And so Columbus Day, or painting Columbus in certain ways that I speak about in that Washington Post piece and I write about more extensively, is one way that they try to claim respectability and entrance into the American mainstream. And ultimately, we see that there are many conservative elements of their campaigns, and Italian Americans, I think, unfortunately, are less vocal in saying immigration restriction based on racism is wrong. Rather, they focus on the fact that they are, in fact, good immigrants, white immigrants, and therefore they should be rewarded as well. And I don't think that this is purposeful. I think that we see many groups relying on this narrative because it practically results in political gains. Even today, people who defend Dreamers tend to fall into this category. Rather than saying, you know, it's wrong to discriminate against someone who came to this country without choice at 2 years old, we tend to hear that Dreamers can stay or should stay because they've graduated from high school, gone to college, served in the military, contribute to the economy. So it's a very complicated story.
So we've got a couple minutes left, Danielle, and there is a lot there. In fact, some of it reminds me of a couple of the chapters from the book, The Warmth of Other Suns, from Isabel Wilkerson, where she talks about the great migration from south to north of Black Americans and the struggle with other immigrant populations in the 20th century for status and standing. But where I want to pivot now is we are now in a moment where there are two things happening. Increasingly, Indigenous peoples and other Americans are agitating and advocating to rename Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day, and more Italian Americans are recognizing, are considering advocating for a different approach to celebrating the American contribution that Italian Americans have made. Where could that lead us? What is, as a historian and someone who writes and thinks about this, what is a healthy outcome for the United States?
Well, historians have the privilege of talking about the past, so I'll try to stay there. I do think that this is the right moment to be having this conversation, as we're having so many conversations about monuments and other public symbols like holidays. You know, these conversations are aren't about preserving history. They're about choices about who we choose to commemorate, celebrate, value, what we choose to employ as identity markers for the nation. So I think it's a great start that we are having these long overdue conversations. If you look to some other nations that have dealt with questions of problematic history, you see conversations about repositioning monuments, contextualizing them with more history, or even removing and relocating monuments to museums. This has been a solution that's been quite popular in Germany so that one can sort of get the proper context around some of these monuments that once stood in the past and perhaps may not in the future.
Well, that is Danielle Battisti, an associate professor at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, and author of the book, Whom We Shall Welcome, Italian Americans and Immigration Reform. She also has a piece in the Washington Post today on Columbus Day had value for Italian Americans, but that's time to rethink it. Thanks so much for being with us on Radio Boston, Danielle.
Thank you.
So let's turn now to someone who supports a nationwide change from Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. Joining us now is Paula Peters, or Sonk Wabin. She's a member of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe and an independent scholar of Wampanoag history. Welcome, Paula.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I thought I'd start by asking you, how are you observing today? How are you choosing to spend your time?
You know, I am spending my time by reflecting on the sacrifices that our ancestors have made, but also on the continued necessity for us to advocate for ourselves as we are still here. And by keeping alive our culture and bringing our history into balance with what we see today from a historical perspective.
Paula, there were marchers in Boston on Saturday demanding that the city rename Columbus Day, and a lot of surrounding communities have. They've renamed the day to honor Indigenous people, Cambridge, Somerville, Newton's voting on it next week. Why is that so important both locally and nationally? What is at stake?
Well, there is a great deal at stake. Ironically, as American natives, we can sympathize with the Italian people who want to celebrate their history and their heritage. But for Native people, we have been marginalized historically for hundreds of years. This year, marking the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the Mayflower, it's something that is being commemorated, and it's a time when we are stepping up to tell that story with the balance of the Wampanoag perspective. And that's critically important. It's critically important also to look at what not only colonization, but prior to colonization, there were so many atrocities committed upon Indigenous people of North and South America that began with Christopher Columbus. He was a brutal leader that came from Italy and just destroyed the Arawak people. My children, they're grown now. I have three grown children. They did not attend school prior to Columbus Day without me giving them a copy of Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, because even then, I knew how important it was for that story to be told in balance. And it's not something that is made up or exaggerated. It's in his own word that he writes about how he treated these people and how he enslaved
these people. In Columbus's own words, you're saying, just to clarify?
Yes, in Columbus's own words. And I just wanted to read a little piece of that. That after he took and enslaved his first 500 people to be Arawak, to be taken away as slaves, and 200 of them died in the journey over, he said, "Let us, in the name of the Holy Trinity, go on sending all the slaves that can be sold." So there was just absolutely no humanity from this man. And he was he was just brutal to the people of what is today known as Haiti.
So I want to ask you then, at the beginning of that answer, you talked about how Indigenous Americans can understand or sympathize with Italian Americans wanting a place and a way to celebrate their heritage and history and contribution to the United States today. And then you just laid out some stark language, and I think you were pulling those words from Columbus, from Howard Zinn's book, A People's History of the United States. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So that then begs the question, is it possible to celebrate both? Is it possible for Italian Americans to celebrate Columbus and Indigenous Americans to demand recognition for the truth of the history of American Indigenous peoples? Or is the impact from Columbus too great on Indigenous Americans to hold that tension?
You know, in terms of the impact of Columbus, you've inspired me to just look at one other piece where Lacasis writes about, and this is in Howard Zinn's book, there were 60,000 people living on this island, including the Indians, so that from 1494 to 1508, over 3 million people had perished. That was under the rule of Christopher Columbus. How do you wipe out 3 million people? I think that there are so many other contributions that Italians have, from philosophy to theology, food, art. There was Hortensia, who advocated for women's rights as far back as 42 BC. There's Galileo, who was perhaps the greatest scholar of physics and astronomy. There's Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci. There are so many people in history that we can celebrate as Italian people. Why they would choose to cling to Christopher Columbus, who was just such a horrific person, it boggles my mind.
So Paula, you also talked about the 400th anniversary of the Mayflower landing on the shores of Patuxent, now Plymouth, 1620. And I want to talk about a couple of exhibits that you've participated in. The Peabody Museum of Archaeology and Ethnology at Harvard is marking that anniversary with an online exhibit called Listening to Wampanoag Voices Beyond 1620. And also the traveling exhibition, Our Story, 400 Years of Wampanoag History. You participated in both of those exhibits. You know, this emphasis on 1620 really strikes me because of its proximity to the date 1619, which, as you may know, was the title of a New York Times project that seeks to re-anchor our narrative American history to the advent of slavery. I think about Columbus Day and Thanksgiving. Are you seeking a re-anchoring of our narrative American history to this 1620 date and the time after that, especially in New England, where Thanksgiving is such an important holiday for us?
Yes, well, certainly, because there are so many critical backstories to 1620, and that's been a very comfortable place for the casual consumer of history to land in 1620. It's etched on the Plymouth Rock. It's where we know Mayflower landed, and this happy story of friendly Indians and desperate pilgrims unite and have this wonderful harvest, and then they give birth to the Thanksgiving holiday. And there's so much myth around that. But these histories that are not told really inform us in so many ways. And I, you know, kudos to the Peabody for allowing us to give voice to our story through these objects. And it also acknowledges that, you know, that we are still here, that Wampanoag people are able to tell their own story. It's very, very critically important.
And that's Paula Peters, or Sonk Wabin. She's a member of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe and an independent scholar of Wampanoag history. She's a part of Listening to Wampanoag Voices Beyond 1620, a virtual exhibit at Harvard's Peabody Museum. And you can find a link at our website, radioboston.org. Paula, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.